Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Okay, Reg, are we all set?
Hold on a second.
Whoa, I have major readjustments here. Hold on a second. I got something stuck in my... You don't have any floss, do you? That's something stuck in my tooth here. You know, and that's going to bug me the whole day now. No, won't come out. I'll have to floss it later. First world problems, right? These are the problems that I must face on an early day. Having to talk for the next hour with knowing there's something stuck in my tooth, and I'll be feeling it and thinking about it for the rest of the time. But I won't let on during the podcast. The audience will not know that. But you and I will know that as I'm speaking, my tongue will be hitting whatever is in between one of my teeth right toward the front there. So much for my dental updates. Let's do a podcast, okay? I'll give you the three S's in the countdown. You give me the music, I'll give you a podcast, okay? Put it in the books. 305. 305. All right? You ready? Let's do this thing. Star, smile, strong. And here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. Of course we're there. Where else would we be? But as longtime and learned listeners know, just hitting play is not the extent of your responsibility. No. You got to get out there, spread the word, send a link, send a message, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, go back and hear what we've done before. See where we've been to know where we're going. Go to WGNradio.com. Go to the podcast section. Hit the prompt for this podcast. And you will find all, or close to, all previous episodes that we have created and archived and save for posterity so that you can listen and binge and enjoy what we've talked about, low these last almost six years to the date. There should be about 304 in there, which means welcome to 305. 305. So here we are once again in Oscar season. Now, I know you're probably saying, the what? That's the way I have reacted to this Oscar season. The what? The what? It's, you know, no question. The last couple of years has been, let me say that grammatically correct. The last couple of years have been just confusion for whatever we have thought about as something normal, in quotes, or routine or annual. Everything's been thrown up for grabs. Everything's just been up in the air. And there's been postponements and cancellations and reschedulings, and everybody is trying to do things, and and trying to get back to normal. And I've talked about normal, and really there, you know, there is no normal anymore. And there can't be normal when, you know, we've got things going on that are going on in Ukraine right now, because that ain't normal. So this is a very just uncertain time. And it was already that way. And now you throw COVID on there the last 2 years, and now we're past the two-year mark. And have you heard the latest? While everybody is throwing away their masks, literally, I think, at least it seems that way, certainly all the governmental people are throwing away masks, mandates flying by the wayside left and right everywhere. And in the midst of this, once again, we're hearing of a variant, another variant, cropping up in Europe. And if anything, if we look at the history of this, we see a pattern here. I know we're in denial. I know this time we have, you know, we are up to here, and my hand is over my head right now by 4 feet. We're up to here with, you know, COVID and mandate and masks and all this stuff, but it's clear this isn't going to go away completely. And yes, while the severity of it seems to be weakening at times, we still have to realize that COVID is around. People are still getting it. I got it. At least I think I got it. I don't believe I got it. I talked about that. That's why I say go back into the archives and listen just a couple of podcasts ago. I still don't know if I had COVID. I don't know if I did have it. I don't know if I'm glad. Maybe I have an extra immunity because I have been boosted. But that's beside the point. It's clear this just isn't going away, and you know, hopefully the severity of it is lessened thanks to the vaccination and the and maybe another booster. And I'll be first in line to get that booster, even though I have it. And I have this super immunity or whatever I have. I don't care. I will get reboosted. I don't want to get it. I was lucky if I did get it. I don't even know if I had it. So that's not a bad way to have it. The only way I know I had it was I tested positive. But in terms of physical manifestations, you know, I had a little sore throat. It was bad for about a day, but my gosh, I wasn't in a hospital. I was not a ventilator. I didn't have recurring or long COVID. I don't have any you know, symptoms now that are lingering. So if I had it, I had it in a good way. But hey, that's a crapshoot. And don't forget, we're still not overly vaccinated in this country. We are not even close. You know, still about two-thirds, you know, of only two-thirds of the people have been vaccinated, and only half of those of eligible for boosters have been boosted. So we, you know, and I've talked about this, so it is what it is. But I said to you a few weeks ago, or a couple of, you know, 3 months, or three, 2 or 3 weeks ago, or whatever, in podcasts, that, you know, okay, I know we're dropping all these mandates, and we're all thinking that, you know, this the cases are going down and it's all over, but history has shown that this thing does not go away, and I expected a surge to happen here by June or July, and I will stand by that, because it's March and it's over in Europe, and it's beginning to spread, and numbers are even going up here, apparently, in New York and New Jersey and around the country. The cases are going up. People aren't being necessarily hospitalized at huge rates now, but it's still around, and it's going to come back. And everybody was so quick to throw those masks away, and I got news for you. You're going to wind up pinging them back. I have not stopped wearing my mask. I still wear 2 masks. Yes, I do. And I've had COVID, and I've been boosted, so I'm supposedly, you know, super immune, and I'm still wearing 2 masks. And I told you before, several years ago in the start, I will be wearing my mask for years, even after, if it does finally disappear and become negligible. When I go to major areas like airports and even grocery stores, I will still wear my mask. So anyway, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today. But COVID has run amok with many of our our societal types of reliable events, right? And the Academy Awards have fallen prey to this. And I have to say, now, you know, I've talked about the Academy Awards on several occasions over the last, you know, 6 years. We've talked about it just from a standpoint of, you know, of predictions and who's going to win and who's that. And I've always talked about I talked about even before that I felt that they didn't need a host. And then, of course, they didn't have a host for a couple of years because of COVID. And it's been a very strange, they've kept the Oscars going. This year is the 94th year, I believe. And, you know, they've kept it going. They want to keep that streak going. But, you know, it just seems like, the movie business has been truly decimated, I believe, by COVID, and they will probably try to put a bright face on it. Oh no! And they've, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, with streaming and first run films in the home now and dates and you know that window of when it was first run movie would be at the theater, and now it's been cut in many ways, even though they're starting to now get more back to the original model of about 45 days or so that it was exclusively in theaters before it came home. But COVID forced the hand. I think things were moving that way, but COVID certainly forced the hand of getting first-run films into the home quicker than they used to be. But the whole movie system, the production of movies, the filming of movies. Movies have been delayed. They have been shut down while they were filming. Tom Cruise movies, I guess Mission Impossible, you know, have had COVID run through them. They've had to, you know, shut down production. And movies have been held back for many years. Still, we're waiting for Tom Cruise's sequel to Top Gun, which was supposed to be out at least a year or so ago, and then it's supposed to come out this year, and it's been delayed again. Because even these big movies that were made just before COVID hit, you know, the numbers are there. Certainly the new Batman film has proven that, and the Superman movie has proven that people will go to theaters, but once again, look at the films that are drawing that. They're all comic book films. They're all aimed at young kids, even though older people go to those as well. When you're seeing, you know, $1 billion at the box office, that's not being generated by 30 or 40 or 50 year olds. That's being generated by teenagers who want to just get out and get away from their parents. And so that's why the movies that have made the most money have all been action films. And most of them have been superhero cartoon based, like Spider-Man and Batman and James Bond, all in that same kind of genre. And as I've said many times, it seems that that's going to be the way of the movie theater. You will see big youth-oriented superhero action films be playing at movie theaters, and you will probably see comedies and certainly dramas may get a token release at theaters, but they will probably go right to streaming at home, because that's where that audience is. They're not going out to theaters anymore. And they, with the luxury of having it at home, that's the most convenient way to do it. So I understand that the Oscars have been in a quandary, because you know, there's been this movement. You remember when COVID first started? Oh, we have to have baseball. It was right, you know, it started right when spring training was right in the swing, and the season was supposed to start in early, you know, late March, early April of 2020, and then they delayed it, and then they did wind up a 60 game season later in the year with no crowds there, and but everybody was saying how, oh well, we need baseball. We need baseball to feel normal. You know, we're all locked up. We need baseball. Baseball will help us get through this, you know, this lockdown. And it didn't. The first couple of days, it was a novelty. And then it went by the wayside. And, you know, everybody talks about, you know, baseball or sports, you know, helping us bring back normalcy. And movies fall into that category as well. But it just seems like that industry, and we've seen sports now come back, and crowds are back there. But, you know, most games are outside, and sports fans are rabid, and you know, movie theaters are indoors, and you're right on top of each other. And I think people that go there are like, well, you know, why should I risk that? If I want to see it, you know, seeing it, yes, on the big screen, no question, much better, much different experience. But if it's not a big, loud, action-packed film with special effects and big, you know, sound effects as well, if you're watching a comedy or you're watching a drama, you know, aside from the largeness of the screen, you can get sort of the same impact if the drama is good by watching it on your screen at home. And today, many people have at least 50 or 60 inch screens. Not watching movies on 25-inch or, you know, 13-inch screens at home anymore. So the movies have been in a very odd space. They're trying to find there's two things going on in the movie world right now. How do we get by in the present, and how are we going to advance in the future? And I don't think they have the answer to either one of those right now. They're trying their best. Movies are released at theaters only initially. But aside from, as I said before, the big tentpole franchise superhero fantasy films, no one's going to see the theater. No one's going in the theater. And these other ones that are shown in home, they gain some buzz, but they don't. What really, you know, what's funny is I always bemoan every time you watch the news on a Sunday. They will say, oh, and the weekend box office receipts. And they'll rattle off these millions of dollars in box office things. And it almost sounds like such a throwaway, like a time filler. But now, in the last 2 years, what you realize, at least what I've realized, is while those numbers don't mean a lot to me on the face of them, the box office numbers, what they do, they do carry some kind of a currency, no pun intended. They do carry some kind of a purpose in that they do reflect and do bring attention to movies and how well they're performing, whether good or bad. And it does help in the promotion and the buzz. And I never really, I didn't really appreciate the full extent of that until now. Another COVID lesson learned, because without that little tally, without that little scorecard every weekend, and hearing about movies and getting a sense of what are people reacting to, what are people seeing en masse in big numbers, the top three, the top five movies of the weekend, a lot of films are just sort of out there and floating around. And there's not a lot of buzz. And aside from your Spider-Mans and your Batmans, when they make, you know, $1 billion or $500 million, that makes a headline. And you go, oh, okay, well, I guess Robert Pattinson as Batman was successful. Okay, we waited a year or so for that. We know he got COVID during the filming. But it looks like, you know, the guy from Twilight pulled it off. Okay, maybe I'll see that film. Maybe I'll look forward to seeing the next one. But aside from some of those high-profile types of things, there isn't a lot of excitement in the last 2 years about movies. There is a lot of promotion that happens before a film is released, but it just, Have you noticed? It just doesn't seem to have that same oomph. And I think that's because the payoff isn't there. And the payoff, it turns out, is those box office receipts. As silly and mundane and as throwaway as it sounds, there's kind of a payoff to that. So, you know, for the week, you say, oh, there's a new Batman movie coming out, and you see the interviews for a week or so, and then it's opening Friday, and then on Sunday you see, oh, Batman is number one. You go, well, okay, maybe I'll see it. But at least it puts it out there in the public arena. There's a buzz circulating it around it. And now you don't get that. You get the same promotion. You see all these people, they're doing Zoom interviews, they're doing some in-person interviews to promote the movie. But the idea that it's coming out on Friday doesn't have that same oomph. At least I don't feel that same oomph anymore. And suddenly you realize, oh, that movie's been out for 3 weeks. And it's so hard to navigate now as to what is on television, where, when, because there's so much on. There's so many streaming services. These things drop in the middle of a week sometime. Unless you're really keeping tabs on it, it's hard to keep up as to what is being released. And then there's this mix now. It's not just new series or new TV shows. Now movies have been put in the same bucket, the same release kind of schedule. First run, formerly theatrical only films are now side by side in terms of competition, in terms of scheduling, with 10-part episodic shows. So even the importance, you know, the movie always had that kind of prestige to it because you couldn't see it at home. It gave it that extra status, aside from the presentation, as I said before, with the giant screen and the effects and the sound and everything like that. When you go to a theater, the largeness of it when you go to the theater, but that inherently gave movies a leg up on television shows. The presentation itself and how you could see it. You were relegated. You had to go out and see that movie. You couldn't just sit at home and hit a button and watch it. You just couldn't hit a button on your phone. You had to go to the theater. And then there's that whole experience there with the popcorn and the lines and the smell of the popcorn and the seats and the trailers and the big screen and the sound and the whole thing. And now that's been diminished. It's not lost. It's still there. That experience is still there. And some have been taking advantage of it as theaters have reopened, but not in the same numbers. That's obvious. So films are now side by side with television shows and documentaries and anything else that's on a streaming service. So the movie, the feature film, is now lost some of its prestige. And in conjunction, I believe, so then have the Academy Awards. Now the Academy Awards have been under fire for the last 15 or 20 years on a variety of topics and issues about sexism and racism, mainly, that, a lot of black actors and actresses and overall minorities in general have not been duly recognized in the nominations or in the victories. And then, of course, there's been a whole kind of, behind the scenes thing of this Me Too type of thing of how people are, some of the biggest producers in Hollywood have been accused. So movies have taken a hit. The Oscars themselves have taken a hit. A lot of controversy about, you know, minorities and race being a factor, and then certainly gender, the lack of women, mainly in, you know, the directing categories, not getting their due, even though many, many women now are directing. When it comes to Oscar time, they have not been as nominated and recognized as their male counterparts. So once again, as our society has been churning and has been transforming and has been struggling with this shift, the Academy Awards have been right in the middle of that and have, in many ways, have helped push these causes into the limelight, because in the past, the Academy Awards have been such a big event, a must-see, must-watch event. And so the Oscars were important. Well, why aren't these, you know, if we're going to change society, one way is we have to make sure that, you know, the Oscars are so well you know, watched by hundreds of millions of people around the world. So the Oscars should lead the way to social change. But over the last couple of years, certainly because of COVID, the Academy Awards have been at best following. They haven't been leading anything. And even in the last 10 or 15 years, when there's been controversy about the Oscars, it was because of its prominence. It was because of its perceived importance that it became a big issue about recognizing people of color, of recognizing women. But it was also looking by aiming that microscope, it was also showing how the Oscars as an institution, the Academy Awards, as an institution, was slow to change and was sort of stuck in its own ways. And there was a lot of calls for change in how the voting process took place, change in the literally the complexion and the makeup of those who are admitted into the Oscar voting, so that more diverse viewpoints and ultimately choices in films and filmmakers would be represented by the nominees. So there's been a lot of call for change, and the Academy Awards have been slow and, I think, inefficient in changing. They've tried, but they haven't really done it. And what we discovered during COVID, much to the chagrin of those who run the Oscars, is that maybe they're not that important after all. A lot of things that we put a huge amount of importance on before COVID have lost their prestige. The emperors have lost their clothes. We have found out that we can do without some of them, or if not do without them, they're not the events or the moments that we felt were musts, that we had to have them. And while sports has certainly come back, we're in the midst of March Madness now, and you know, everybody has their brackets, and people love that. And baseball now is coming back, a little delayed, but at least it's coming back. And now that Tom Brady is unretired, there's a lot more interest in the upcoming football season. But I have to say that movies, you're talking here, you know, and I'm talking from the standpoint of somebody who has been a major movie fan from when I can remember. As a little kid, my parents took me to films, to movies, as a little kid, I've been going to movies since before I can remember. I know I was at least 3 or 4 years old going to movies, and I have memories of going to those movies. I remember one time, you know, a little kid, you don't know, I don't know where what that means. I'm sitting at home with my mom, and she says, "What do you want to do today?" I said, "Well, let's go to the movies." I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old. I don't even know, early 70s. And now I have to laugh at it, and, you know, wow, kudos to my mom for for wanting to please her son. But I, you know, so I must have been able to read, right? Because I said, well, here's a movie I want to see. Taste the Blood of Dracula. Right? I loved horror movies when I was a little kid. Taste the Blood of Dracula. Little did I find out now that it was, you know, starring Christopher Lee, who was one of the great memorable Draculas in the 60s and 70s. But I'll never forget that title, Taste the Blood of Dracula. Look it up. It's now considered kind of like a B-movie classic. It would be like on Svengoolie now. It's such a bad movie that it's good, you know, one of those. But I said, I want to see Taste the Blood of Dracula. And so my mom, who did not drive, bless her heart, we lived, you know, on the northwest side of Chicago, and, you know, we took buses and subways and stuff, you know. And I believe now in retrospect, it was like at the State Lake Theater. Okay, so that's not close to where we were at. That's several buses and subways. But sure enough, my mom took me downtown because I wanted to see Taste the Blood of Dracula. So I've been going to a lot of movies. In fact, you know, my parents, too. I was an only child. And so as I was, you know, my parents wanted to, you know, they wanted to go out and see movies, too. Right. And you can't always get a babysitter. And so I would go to see a lot of films that were, you know, were not just Disney G-rated movies. I would go to a lot of R-rated movies. I was seeing the movies that adults were seeing at a young age. And I you could say, wow, that was pretty, that was bad parenting. But I would argue that from a young age, I probably didn't get half the things, but I was at least seeing these movies and learning how to watch a film. Not just look at one. Everybody watches it, but you can look at a film and you start to find things at it. You know, most people just watch a movie, but looking at it is where you start to see what this filmmaker's doing, the way the camera moves. I really believe that my appreciation for movies in my later life was first sparked by the fact that I was going to see the movies of the day. Even as a young kid, I was exposed to them. I'll never forget, I went to see, with my parents, I went to see Serpico with Al Pacino. Very popular movie at that time. But, you know, for a little kid, you know, I was probably 10 or so. Probably maybe even younger than that. And but there was some stuff there. There was a lot of violence. I didn't really get the subtext maybe of the film at 10 years old. I didn't fully grasp it, but I certainly was riveted by Al Pacino, and I could appreciate good acting, and I could appreciate when an actor can grab you and keep you engrossed and keep you entertained. That's for sure. And there was a lot of violence in that, and there was even some sexual, representations there too. I never forget. There is a scene in Serpico, and you talk about, you know, when you're a little kid, how things stay with you. I'll never forget this. So I'm with my parents. I don't know if I was sitting in between them. I know my mom was next to me. I don't know if I was in the middle or my dad, my mom, and then me at the end, but. So there's, you know, watching Serpico in the theater, and then all of a sudden there is this scene, and the leading lady and Al Pacino are in a bathtub, you know, and this is the 70s when, you know, nudity was pretty free. Movies were starting to, you know, really, and it wasn't, and they really, they, the camera stayed on the nudity, you know, it was kind of a badge of honor in the '70s for nudity. And so there's this elongated scene, at least it seemed that way. Probably now it's a couple of seconds, but for a 10-year-old kid, there's this scene of you know, Al Pacino in the leading, and I don't know who the actress is now offhand, but they were in a tub, and she was, you know, topless, you could see, you know. And so I remember, and so, you know, we don't know that what's going to happen in this movie, right? So I'm watching the movie, and there's this scene, and there's this woman, and, you know, she's topless, and, you know, in the tub, and the camera's just staying there, and they're having all this dialogue while she's there topless talking to Al Pacino. And she's making no effort to cover herself up, and the camera is making no effort to disguise this. It's just there they are. And so I hear my mom when you know, on the big screen too, right? And so when this image pops up, I hear my mom go, and I was so embarrassed because I, you know, it's like, oof, you know, you're with your mom and there's a topless woman there. So that's pretty embarrassing. I don't care how old you are, especially if you're like 9 or 10. So I just, when I heard her kind of go, and I think I saw her turn her face, but I, you know, I think I saw her turn her head, but I realized, I don't know if I didn't know if I fully grasped the entire situation, but my mom's reaction certainly let me know that this was something that I shouldn't be seeing. And so I quickly went into fall asleep mode. And I really believe that when she groaned, I heard that. It registered to me that maybe I shouldn't be seeing this. And I pretended like I was sleeping. So I had my eyes closed and I put my head down, you know, off to the side on the chair, and I pretended like I was sleeping so that when she turned to look, she saw that I wasn't seeing this. And maybe that, you know, eased her tension or her fear. Like, oh my gosh, I'm exposing my young son to this nudity here. But I think I had my eyes kind of open. So I don't know if I completely fooled her or not. I never asked her about that, but I'll never forget that. And then later on, when Serpico, you know, if that was on TV, that scene was always cut. But I remember watching Serpico again, then later, years later, either on VHS where the whole film was uncut, or you know, on some kind of cable service. Waiting for that scene to say what, you know, because if I don't know if I closed my eyes or kept one eye open, but I'm like, okay, now I want to see what I was missing. I remember this scene, but now I remember it sort of out of one eye and kind of half closed. So let me just get a look at this scene now with two eyes wide open. And of course, it wasn't all that earth shattering, but as I said before, as a 10-year-old, it certainly was. So I've been going to movies for a long time, and I do believe that exposure to movies at such a young age, including Disney films, still love Jungle Book, know it by heart, still love Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, all these movies I remember as a little kid, still love Willy Wonka, still love Dr. Dolittle with Rex Harrison. Those were all movies that I remember seeing as a little kid. And then I would have, and then my love for music was born out of that too, because I have all those original soundtracks from those movies too. So not only did I like those movies, but then I went back. So I still love to sing Bare Necessities from Jungle Book, or, you know, Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka, or the Chitty Chitty, oh, you, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, we love you. And, oh, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang loves you too. And you know, like I said, Willy Wonka, and if I could talk to the animals, just think of it. You know, Rex Harrison did that talk singing thing. So I still remember those. And I really believe, and I went on to, be. I used to write stories and still do sometimes about movies. And I was a movie reviewer. I was a movie columnist. I was a member of the Chicago Film Critics for several years. I edited a Hollywood movie magazine. I was a managing editor of that. So I was. It was my career for many years. And even now, I still write stories about pop culture and movies and talk about it. So my point is that you're talking to somebody here who has a love of films, appreciation of films. Movies have been a major part of my life for, you know, as I'm just telling you now, some of my earliest life memories have to do with movies. And yet here I sit now. And I'm saying, I'm not feeling the same way about movies anymore. I used to think, and I used to say this, and it's not something profound. You hear it all the time now. But I remember saying this 15 or 20 years ago on the radio and stuff. That these for people like me, the Oscars were like the Super Bowl. That one day, that one event that everybody watched, everybody was excited about, and there was a horse race, and which one's going to win, and I was so into it for many years, the horse race of it, and the fun of predicting it, that I used to, and this is, 30-some years ago, before the internet and all that stuff, I used to take, the top five or six categories, the four major acting categories, the best picture and the best director. So those six categories, the main six. And I would create, type up on a typewriter with real paper, the envelopes for each winner. And I would actually have the sheet that's inside the envelope. On the outside of the envelope, it would say, best picture, best actor. And then inside, sealed, there would be, and the Oscar goes to, and I would have my prediction typed out in there, and it would be sealed in the envelope. And I would give those six envelopes to my wife. And as we watched the Oscars, she would open up the envelope, and I would match my prediction, which so as the presenter was opening the envelope to announce the Oscar winner, my wife was opening up my envelope with my prediction and my Oscar winner. So that's how into it I was. So when I talk about right now about, wow, it seems to me like the Oscars have lost a lot of their prestige, I think I say that from a perspective or a standpoint of somebody who loved the Oscars, who got way into the Oscars, who enjoyed the excitement and the anticipation of it, who saw all the Oscar nominees every year, and who felt like he had a vested interest in who won and getting those predictions right. It was interactive before there was anything known as interactivity. I was creating my own interactive platform at home with my typewriter and my envelopes. And so I'm actually sad to see how the Oscars, in my view, have lost their importance and lost their prestige, which I believe is an outgrowth of the overall of how movies have lost that specialness because of the fact. And it's not just the delivery system. There's, as I said before, I think that's a major reason. There was something special. There was something exclusive. There was something enhanced. You had to go to a movie theater to see that movie. And now you don't. Now you can just, for the most part, you can sit at home and watch it. So that aspect is gone. But I also believe, so you can blame the delivery service, how we get films, how we consume them at home now versus going to the theater exclusively. But I also think that Hollywood deserves some blame because they have totally changed the game based on what type of movies get made. There was a time when movies were an adult-oriented medium. Movies were made for adults. There were always kid movies. Don't get me wrong. As I said before, there were Disney things and cartoons and screwball comedies that kids could see and animated films. So yes, there were always children films, but they were just that. And sometimes they crossed the lines and adults could appreciate them too. But as I said before, you look at the 70s, which is still hailed as one of the best eras, the early 70s. Some of the best movies ever made came from that period, some say 68, 69 through maybe 75, 76. Some of the best movies that are still considered the best movies today were made during that time, and some of the best filmmakers like Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola. You know, The Godfather, Mean Streets, Taxi Driver, you know, Bonnie and Clyde. You know, these movies are still hailed as some of the best movies ever made. French Connection, all in that period there. Very real films, some great acting, great directing, and poignant and engaging stories. Network, oh, Paddy Chayefsky. Network, Sidney Lumet. That movie today, if you've never seen Network, you owe it to yourself to see the movie Network from 1976, because what that movie predicted back then, and it was a satire, and yet it almost became true in many ways. It was so ahead of its time, and as far as what it saw, TV and TV news, where it was and where it was going, and it nailed it. Network, 1976. Peter Finch as Howard Beale. I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. So it is sad to see the Oscars losing their relevance, but I just wonder now. I mean, do you care about the Oscars? Do you really care? Do you watch it out of obligation? Do you watch it out of, well, you know, you see what someone's going to do? Let's see what's going to happen, and let's see, you know, what they're wearing or something. Are you more interested in the red carpet? Or are you interested in the actual ceremony? I mean, over the last 15, 20 years, these ceremonies have become so bloated. Over the last 50 years, I mean, sometimes these things have gone 4 hours. And they've, you know, in a internet world, they are struggling. You know, how do we, you know, they're always trying to be, you know, relevant and on the cutting edge. And they're trying to go viral, and they're speaking to, you know, the different platforms, and, you know, they're trying to be funny. They're trying to be everything, and they wind up not being anything at all. It's an award show. Just give out the awards. But then, if you remember, in 2020, when they just gave out the awards, it was so boring, I don't think anyone cared. So I don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way to do it. But it starts and ends with the movies themselves. That's what creates the Oscars, the horse race. When there are great movies and great performances and great directing by several, 4 to 5, 6, 7, 8 movies, that's what creates the interest and the anticipation and you wanting to watch this, and you'll sit through all the other BS that they do on that ceremony to hear that winner. Remember a few years ago, Warren Beatty read the wrong winner. I mean, my gosh, you talk about losing your relevance. Whew. Yeah, the Oscars have been through some interesting pitfalls the last 10, 15 years. But now, whether it's been, claims of racism or misogyny, it's never been about apathy. And that is the problem right now. I think there's apathy toward the Oscars, and I don't know how it comes back. I don't know how that apathy ends. I don't know how movies and the Oscars get that buzz back. Because if movies continue to be shown at home, they are going to lose that specialness. And if the movies lose that specialness, then the Oscars have to lose that specialness. And what was once a major, major annual event that had ratings of billions around the world, and it had Super Bowl-like numbers. It used to surpass the Super Bowl. It used to be the most watched event on television, were the Academy Awards, every year. It's only been the last 20 years or so where the Super Bowl is just hyped up and amplified the its image, where the Super Bowl is the most watched event now on American television. But it used to be the Academy Awards going away. There was an excitement. There was a glamour. There was about the movies. Everybody was invested. People saw the movies. They rooted for movies. They predicted movies. And now I'm just hearing or feeling a, what? I don't think the last couple, I mean, I guess they have to have Oscars, right? And this year they're touting the fact that we're going to get back to normal. There's no more, it's going to be in person, no masks. It's the Oscars show again. They've gone through many incarnations, during COVID here to try to stay safe as well as put on an entertaining show. They failed for 2 years in a row. And now the goal is, it's back to normal. There's only one thing missing. Nobody's excited about these movies. Nobody's excited about any of the performances. That's the engine that drives the Oscars. So you've got a twofold problem here. You've got the movie industry, suffering and in the doldrums and in a slump. Part of it because of COVID, but also part of it because Hollywood itself has betrayed a great portion of its audience. The majority of movies made today are either aimed at little kids, animated films, real small kids, or Arrested Development kids, teenagers and people in their 30s and 40s who buy comic books and still want to, watch, superheroes. And now those kids are getting in their 50s too, by the way. They're not kids anymore. But basically, we've got two major kind of movies that drive the Hollywood business right now. Kids movies, animated movies, which are a gold mine because parents want to take their kids to movies. Encanto is the big one now, of course. And Toy Story and all the Pixar films. And as I said before that, there was, Snow White and as I was a kid, Jungle Book. And so kids movies always been popular, but not like they are now. But those are really aimed at kids. Animated kids movies or animated adult movies, which is what all these superhero movies are. And sadly, lost in the shuffle are dramas and comedies and surprisingly even romantic comedies, which used to be a major deal. Even those are falling by the wayside and not doing as well as people used to think they were. The young women would take their boyfriends on date nights, and those aren't even doing well anymore. Your Love Actuallys and all those rom-coms, you know, Pretty Woman. You know, I mean, Julia Roberts made a career on those movies. You don't even see those anymore. You see those on the Hallmark Channel more than you see them at the films, at the movie theaters anymore. So the theaters, the producers, the studios have gone for the easy money, which is reflected in the box office. I understand why they're going for that, but they have betrayed and neglected an audience that helped create the business over the last 40 years. People in their, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s and even 70s who have been going to movies for most of their lives, and but they want to see a good comedy or a good drama, and that just doesn't pay the rent anymore. And so you do see those mostly now on television. They become episodic TV, you know, episodic shows as opposed to first run 2-hour movies. And I know, speaking for myself, I would love to go to the movies again. But give me something to see, because I'm not going to see, you know, Avengers. I'm not going to see Iron Man. I'm not going to see all that stuff. Now you say, well then, Jim, did you go and see Belfast? Did you see Power of the Dog? Did you see West Side Story? Did you see Licorice Pizza? Did you see King Richard? Did you see Coda? Did you see Nightmare Alley? Did you see Dune? Did you see Drive My Car? Did you see Don't Look Up? I can honestly say that of those movies, I only saw one, and it's because it was on television. Those were are all the nominees for Best Picture, but I don't know if any of those really grab my interest enough to have gone to see them at the theater. They're probably all very good films, but I don't know if any of those films are going to wind up, we're still going to be talking about those films 40 years from now. Like we're still talking about The Godfather. This is the 50th anniversary of The Godfather. We're still talking about it. I could still watch that movie from beginning to end. I know all the dialogue. It doesn't matter. I can still, and I'm still finding things about it. I'm still seeing new things 50 years later. Are we going to be talking about Power of the Dog? Do you remember Nomadland? That was the Best Picture last year. Are we still talking about that movie? Are we talking about Parasite anymore? Is anybody talking about Parasite? This is my point. Yes, every year there is a best film, but are they great films? Are they Mean Streets? Are they Network? Are they Bonnie and Clyde? Are they The Godfather? Are they The French Connection? Are they Dog Day Afternoon? I don't know. I don't think so. So Hollywood is responsible for the shape the movie business is in. And Hollywood is responsible for the state of the Oscars. I don't even think now so now, of course, this year there are, they are trying to be as diverse as possible. The leading person who's probably going to win the Academy Award. And don't forget now, this is posting on Monday. So the Academy Awards are yesterday. When I'm recording this, they haven't happened yet. So I don't know who's going to win. Just let me give you that. But all bets are on Jane Campion for winning for Power of the Dog, for being Best Director. There's a woman. The hosts, three women. Two African-American and one white woman. Wanda Sykes, Amy Schumer, Regina Hall. One is a lesbian, one is a new mom, and one is an African-American actress. So they're spanning many of the genres and many of the groups here. three women. So they can't be accused, right, of not elevating women, not showcasing women. The Jane Campion, most likely, at very least, has won several awards already for Power of the Dog. She's the leading, favorite to win Best Director, so that will be huge. For Best Actress, we've got, Nicole Kidman for playing Lucy. Three of the nominees are playing real women. Once again, exalting real women, not just fictional people. Jessica Chastain playing Tammy Faye Baker. Nicole Kidman playing Lucille Ball. And Kristen Stewart playing Lady Diana. Exalting real women, powerful women, popular women, culturally important women. Strong, bold women. Odds-on favorite to win Best Actor is probably Will Smith for King Richard, playing the father of the Williams sisters, the tennis players. So once again, if the Academy Awards have been criticized for not recognizing African Americans, for not recognizing women, as it stands right now, Will Smith could win, odds on favorite, maybe Benedict Cumberbatch for Power of the Dog, but Will Smith has won some awards already for King Richard, so there's your African-American. The hosts, two African-American, three women, two African-American, and Best Actor, Best Director could be a woman. So it's already shaping up to be possible winners will be hitting all those areas where the Academy Awards in the past have been accused of neglecting or overlooking. But the real question is, does it matter? Does it matter? Have movies lost their luster? Have the Academy Awards lost their luster? If you tell me that you only watch the Academy Awards because you like to watch the dresses, you like to see the interview shows, you're not watching it for the movies. You're not watching for the main thing. You're watching the sideshow. You're watching the spectacle, but you're not watching the awards. You're not watching the main thrust of it, the celebration of movies and the best movies of the year and the best performances of the year that used to be the guiding force of why we watched. In the last 20 years, maybe even longer, it has not been the movies themselves. The movies have been diluted, and they've been slowly diluted and slowly diluted to the point we get to this point now. When I read off that list to you, Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Power of the Dog, West Side Story, Nightmare Alley, when I read that list off, do you get goosebumps? Do you get excited by any of those? Are you rooting for somebody? Are you gonna sit home and make up envelopes and put the winners in them and seal them and give them to your significant other to open while they're? Are you that into it, or are those movies gonna come and go and next year you won't even remember them? I don't know what the answer is. But I'll be honest with you, I'm probably going to, for the first time, record the Oscars, but I don't know if I'm going to be watching them. Now, and this year, there are even a lot of controversy. They're eliminating some of the categories that they will televise to keep the show tighter and more on time, so it's not as bloated and it's more interesting, which got a lot of controversy. So just like the Grammys have become less about the awards and more about the performances, the Oscars are now making changes and becoming more cognizant of the ratings and what the audience wants as opposed to the actual ceremony itself. It's always been a mixed bag, but what's always saved it is the horse race, are the great movies and the great performances. And COVID certainly has cut into the great movies and the great performances of things that have been made or have been able to make. But also Hollywood has slit its own throat in many ways by going for the purely now for the big bucks rather than making the best movies possible. They're just making the best money-making movies possible. And so we sit here with the Academy Awards one time, one of the most watched, most exciting nights of television viewing. Always looked forward to it. In 2022, I'll probably DVR it and fast forward through it until I get to Best Picture. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget, tell your friends, tell your family, send them a link, send them a message, tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 305. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. And the Oscar goes to...